Let's go to our next big cashfer. Let's talk Teddy Cudi-Pietro to the Colorado Rapids, which you broke earlier today and broke my brain because we did our Colorado Rapids season preview last night that we were getting ready to put out alongside Holding the Highline, the best source for any of your Rapids coverage in soccer in Colorado overall. And this move kind of is in line a lot with what we talked about. The last piece this club needed for this year was a chance creator off the wing.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the Highline with Rabbi and Red. Talking the Rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2024. Happy Black History Month, everybody. Arsenal are making sure Erling Haaland stays humble, lad? The Rapids finally have a U22 winger, and it's not who you were expecting. And we are officially 2 weeks away from the start of the season for the Burgundy Boys, in which I will be seeing my soccer hetero life mate in the face. Joining me now, said soccer hetero life mate, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Woohoo! We are 2 weeks away from me descending into the city of Denver, Colorado on a magic aluminum bird. Should be good times. Cannot wait to hit that A-train, A-line back on out that Matt personally surveyed and laid the track for over the years that I was working at the day school in Denver. I was educating young minds and twisting and warping their little senses of the future. And Matt was actually, you know, working on the railroad all the live long day. That's not true. He actually was working on 70 at the time, burying it under deep underground.
Yes. I will say, Mark, the community, the building, the upper structure for the Eisenhower Tunnel, I've actually worked in and gotten a tour of that.
Whoa! I didn't even know there was an upper structure. I thought the upper structure was called a mountain.
Well, okay, so there's the mountain on top of that, but then there's, like, the actual structure, which has, like, a lot of the trucks, a lot of the supplies that they're stored, and then, like, the command center with, like, 14 monitors. I cannot reveal said photos because there's some security components to that.
And, oh, my God.
And client consultant privileges that come with that. But I have physically been in there, Mark. No sign of the Illuminati, so I don't think there are any conspiracy theories about the Eisenhower Tunnel, unlike our beloved Denver International Airport, where, Mark, obviously you will be descending and will have to get the blessing of Lucifer that I don't
now,
get. Unlike other people in America, Mark, I'm not convinced that Lucifer is in any way anti-Semitic.
Now, the amazing thing about what you just said is it is actually a brilliant idea that nobody's really ever thought of. Like, we think that there's, like, secret, you know, all sorts of, like, alien spacecraft buried under DIA or something like that, or, like, Lucifer's running a cult. But, like, Eisenhower Tunnel is just hiding in plain sight. Like, they literally dug a not-so-secret tunnel right through the Continental Divide on
secret
top of a giant
tunnel.
Mountain. You know secret tunnel! Look at you! Avatar the Airbender, that's
Mark,
the way
I'm
to go.
I'm a millennial,
baby,
who watched cartoons. Like, what do you think I did after Dragon Ball Z was done? Like,
And I'm Gen X, so I only know that from my kids, which shows you how lame I am.
We've got a great show for you tonight, listeners. Like many, this has been a running theme of off-season stuff, where despite the Rapids not spending big in the transfer market, we have a bunch of things to talk about. MLS-related, Rapids-related, preseason-related. So we'll get into it. Mark, I already delivered my rant two pods ago now about the changing landscape of in-house MLS media that they are doing, and that included Extra Time Radio announcing that they were ending as a podcast. And we've also sent her rumblings that the commentators for MLS Season Pass will be having not be traveling for some games or potentially most games. To where, Mark, what do you, what
what is the symbol that you're doing?
They're far away. They're far away. That's what that meant. That was just okay. I'm stretching my arms in like a distance, like kind of like a deep 3-point shot kind of thing. It's like yeah, it's a long range shot now.
Mark was doing there was very much a Nikola Jokic like fadeaway, or I would say Jamal Murray over the no longer Los Angeles Laker Anthony Davis in game 2, whatever series that was. In any case, Mark, so this potentially signals that some of the MLS broadcasts are going to be done in-house, either in Cupertino or in New York, and those are going to be done from booth. Mark, you and I can both comment. We have watched enough European soccer in which the broadcast holder is based in the United States and the commentator is based in the United States and how that deteriorates the experience. It's also cheaper because you're not paying for hotels and flights and per diem for Marcelo Balboa or Max Brados, who loves us, or Jordan Angeli's former colleague, whose name I'm now escaping me from Columbus, Neil Sika. That is his name. So, Mark, what do we make of the general Apple TV potentially simplifying some of their costs? Maybe an executive at MLS deciding the 10 hours a week that Andrew Wiebe and Matt Doyle are spending on extra time could be spent elsewhere. And this generally reflecting the reduction in content, or almost the private equityification of the MLS digital space, that it is hard for me to understand how this grows and educates the fan base.
Well, I'm actually going to take, I wouldn't say a counter, but I'm not going to take MLS's side because I'm sad about it, but I kind of see some of the logic. So let me take the first part of the question first and the second part second. So the shutdown of ETR, Extra Time Radio used to be called, was lamentable and sad, but sort of kind of in a long time coming, in the sense that since the league expanded from like 20 teams to 30, a podcast that covers the entire league was already a totally insane, venture. Like, it didn't make any sense. I was making fun of Goss. I got to do a podcast on this other podcast called Soccer Way last night with David Goss and Tom Bogert, which was absolutely a career highlight for me as a writer reporter. Matt, you're muted, so you'll want to unmute to add your comment. Go.
Link will be in the show notes to that for those who have not heard.
It's not up yet, but it'll be up. So, but yeah, and you know, they were also very honest that covering the whole league was insane, and I was poking fun at Goss like, you know, I always enjoyed listening to you guys, you know, cover in depth 7 teams and then know that the next day some reader was going to send you an angry email saying you didn't mention Portland once last week. And it's like, that's insane. You couldn't possibly mention all the teams. And he had mentioned that there had been talk around headquarters of splitting into an East Coast and a West Coast, but it never went forward. I thought it was really interesting in the MLS press release that they had a link in their press release to all the new media opportunities for Major League Soccer this year. If you scroll down far enough, there was a link to MLS podcasts on Apple Podcasts, and it displayed all of the major podcasts for all of the teams in the league, and we were one of them. And to that end, what I'm saying is I don't actually fully mind that MLS isn't trying to produce all the content itself, because I think what they've realized, to my point at the beginning, is they can't cover the whole league anymore. It's just not possible. And there are people who will do that for them. And I think, honestly, they're kind of like, I wouldn't say they're like promoting us. They didn't do, you know, me and Matt are not getting a check from Apple. That'd be nice. I mean, I would just take a new phone, honestly. That would be totally great. My phone runs out of battery sometime around 1:30 in the afternoon at this point. So but like, they know that they can't really cover the whole league. And I also think that they're moving into a world, although it's, you know, I want the Dave Gosses and the Tom Bogerts and the Andrew Wiebes to get paid and paid well. And I think that this is slightly a move backwards for them potentially. But I think there's also a world where we are finally starting to turn the corner in Major League Soccer's 30th year, where independent journalists can scratch out something resembling a living in the league, because it needs a lot more coverage. Let me answer the second part of the question second, Matt, really quickly, which is, USL went to a everything remote from Tampa Bay model of covering games years ago. they do a pretty decent job. There's something to be lost, there's no doubt. Like, there's not the same sense of, like, stadium ambiance and everything. I always find it adorable to be watching a Riverhounds game in the Riverhounds Stadium and listening to them do the play-by-play while I'm trying to photograph or cover the game. And then hearing them talk about, like, oh, isn't that cute? There's some boats going by in the river. And I'm like, yeah, man, but you're not here. Like, you only see that in the background on the screen in your little office in Tampa Bay. So it's a little weird, and it feels a little detached. You know, the theory of you're going to say something like, it's a chilly night here in Colorado, and the people who are saying that are not in Colorado. They're just reading it off a weather report. But, you know, they fake it pretty decent, and it's okay. So a little bit is lost, but, you know, both of these things, Matt, were kind of a long time coming. And I'm kind of okay with it if we can figure out a way forward in the new world where we're just kind of like, yeah, something was lost, but there's some potential for things to be gained around it too.
What a very MLS thing to do, to cease doing your own in-house content with the people who are actually getting paid to cover the league and to farm it out to the plebe nerds recording from their mom's basements.
Literally.
Who are doing it because it's a passion.
Excuse me, by the way, this is my wife's basement, not my
wife's
mom's
basement. The Michael Azira Memorial Basement, which I will be staying in the second weekend in May, Mark, for Rachel Krieger's wedding and hopefully a Hounds game. Rabbi, Brendan Plone and I recorded last Friday after all of the news about for Denver FC and Denver getting an NWSL expansion team. So if you have not listened to that, go listen to that for that specifically. But Mark, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to react very quickly to your thoughts on officially a professional women's team coming to the Mile High City.
Huge news, big deal, really excited. You know, there are, I think one of the interesting things, and I don't know what you guys said because I haven't gotten to listen to your podcast. I'll take a long walk this week and tune it in. But one of those questions is whether there will be synergies between the NWSL team in Denver and the MLS team, or whether they will be competitors, whether there will be opportunities, even kind of like unrealized or like future opportunities that are kind of like over the horizon that are in development but aren't quite like immediate. So Matt's making faces like there's not a lot of interlinkage right now, and I know that. Like that's been the talk for a while. One of those issues that a lot of people have been chatting about online, and Matt and I have been talking about kind of in the text threads, is stadium issues and like, you know, is NWSL going to build a stadium, and if so, is there going to be two soccer specific stadiums in Denver, Colorado for two teams, neither of whom really needs a bespoke all by themselves stadium? So it's a really interesting kind of like possibility that kind of could evolve. You know, there is CU soccer, and there is DU soccer, and there's Metro State soccer. So there are reasons why you would want to make linkages. There are a bevy of high school football teams in the area that probably wouldn't mind having a nicer football stadium that they could work off of. So there's other ways of doing it. But anyways, I think a lot of people, the other thing that's really fascinating about the NWSL is, and we've talked about this for the last couple of weeks, they did a tremendous job with their League Cup final a couple months ago, selling out and doing a phenomenal job of getting great ratings. There's just a lot of energy and interest right now in women's soccer that is kind of constant. And every time the U.S. gets a little bit better or closer to the World Cup, that kind of grows. And I think just the fact that there are three U.S. women's national team players who grew up in Colorado will always activate that. I think the last thing is new teams are always exciting. It's an opportunity to have an on-ramp to a brand new team and to say, I was there first. You know, I have the first crest. I have the first jersey. I bought season tickets that first season. You know, those are really cool things that Colorado Rapids fans can't do anymore. You know, you can't say, I was there when. There's just not a lot of people left who were there.
You can be
at
there
Mile
for
High
Snow
Stadium.
Classic 05 right. On February 18th when we lose to LAFC.
Right, but it's not the same as being there when the team starts, and there's so much excitement and buzz around that, and so it's really, really good. I hope that there will be some relationships built and some linkages. I think it's good for the overall soccer community in Denver, Colorado. And it also makes Denver out to be, at this point, one of the best sports cities in America. I mean, I think about the fact that they're going to have a basketball team, a baseball team, a hockey team, an American throwball team, a men's soccer team, and a women's soccer team. I mean, they're basically like they're a WNBA team away from, you know, hitting for the cycle in American major sports. And there are not a lot of cities in the United States that can say that. It's basically Chicago, New York, and LA, right? And maybe like one or two other cities. That's amazing. That's a, that Denver on the come up, people.
I think that's go back and listen to it if you haven't, listeners. The various press conferences that would have happened this past Thursday at time of recording. Go back and listen in your feeds to the most recent episode before this episode of Holding the High Line, where Brendan and I, Blake, break everything down and talk about, I think, everything that we could have, including Mark bringing up kind of a final question of what does this mean for the relationship, and to the extent that for Denver FC and Colorado Rapids are compounding, are force multipliers for each other, and in what ways they're potentially competing for the same audience space and what that looks like. Mark, we'll start with the news of the day on actual Rapids front, and that is, as originally reported by Stephen Goff of the Washington Post, that Colorado Rapids are close to a deal with DC United U22 winger Ted Kudipiero. How are we saying this, Mark?
Ted Kudipietro.
Ted Kudipietro. Okay.
You were close. Try again.
Ted Kudipietro.
Dipietro. There you go.
Ted Kudipietro. Thank you. All right. Eventually, I'm getting this right. This is my new Andreas Maxu, Mark. Anyways, listeners, so Stephen Goff reported it originally, and then followed up, there was confirmation from the aforementioned Tom Bogert of Give Me Sports, and then as well as myself from Burgundy Wave and Braden Nurse of the Denver Post. So at this point, if those four people are saying something about a DC United and a Colorado Rapids transaction, it is all but done. Here's what we know. So the deal is one of the new cash transfers that's available. So no GAM, no TAM, no funny money. This is straight cash, homie. $1.125 million is the upfront fee, and then potentially $250,000. $250,000 in add-ons. I believe that is going to be based on some combination of playing time and goal contributions. I've also heard, Mark, that there is a 15% sell-on clause that would include either if there was another interleague transfer or if Kudipietro is sent abroad as well. Kudipietro just turned 23 years old. He was an academy graduate out of DC United. He signed as a homegrown in 2020. And this past September, he would have gotten a contract extension that would have made him a U22 eligible player. For those counting, Mark, since you want to update your spreadsheet probably with player salaries, his 2024 compensation in total was $356,000. Two players who were on the Rapids in 2024 who were making about or slightly more than that, Mark, were Jonathan Lewis and Keegan Rosenberry. I've also heard indications that the Rapids have been tracking him for an extended period of time. So, Mark, even potentially looking at him when he would have been with Loudoun United, when it would have been, I don't know, Mark, when they would have made the jump to MLS Next Pro. He might have been there for the last year they were in the USL Championship. And very much they see him as an inverted winger, but he's kind of similar to Omir Fernandez in that, just like with DC United under Troy Lesane, where they were playing in a 4-2-3-1, he played all three of those positions across the three. So he could be on the right, he could be on the left, he could be in a central attacking role. And then Chris Armas actually answered a question about this, Mark, when Braden and I spoke to him for our first segment of From Field 20 of 2025, saying, quote, he's a dynamic attacker. The club are close to reaching that official agreement. Another young guy that can fit the way we want to do things. He's got a great attitude. He's a competitive kid. He's very powerful. He's going to bring a nice element to that final third that speaks to who we are, Armas said. And then I've also heard Mark shaking down a few other trees as well, that Wayne Rooney, who would not have overlapped with him as a player, but would have been a coach for the entire time of his start with DC and Loudoun, said that he really, really liked his energy as well. And Mark, there's been a video that's been circulating around from something that DC United put out, maybe pre-Apple, talking about him. And he talked about like being pissed off about losing 5v2 Rondo's training sessions, and like being mad when he wasn't selected, even when he was a 20-year-old kid who was a homegrown and not expected to be a starter. Mark, your thoughts? You watched him a little bit when he was at Loudoun. I assume you've seen some of the highlights and some of the analytics. Matt Doyle had a really good post on Burgundy Sky about this. Rabbi, your thoughts on TKD becoming a Burgundy boy.
I did not have this one on my laundry list. I did not expect this. And a huge, like, kind of thing that the Rapids, you know, nerd Burgundy wave holding the Highline community has been talking about is the need for a winger. But then there's other people who've been talking, especially Matt Doyle has been on the train, that the Colorado Rapids are going to a 3-4-2-1 formation. And that means that they're looking for more central players than they are for winger players, which is a really interesting possibility that I don't think any of us really know the answer to. And we'll be looking forward to the first third of the season, excuse me, to see how this all plays itself out. Ku DiPietro, as I knew him as a young academy player who was playing in USL and making trips to Pittsburgh in 21 and 22 and 23, he was kind of a central midfielder, head on a swivel, attacking mid kind of guy. But just like a lot of young attacking midfielders, they know that those positions are taken up by experienced, really highly talented, specialized players. And so they've got to learn how to play out on the wing and in the hopes that maybe they'll get to move back inside. And that, I think, is what DC United did with DiPietro. And then I think it feels like they didn't really plan on bringing him back in. So I personally don't really know what his best position is. There are two possibilities. Possibility number one, which I think a lot of people are assuming based on the Rapids formation from last year, is the Rapids are going to play a 4-2-3-1. Ku DiPietro is going to play probably on the left wing with Mihailovic in the middle and Calvin Harris or Kevin Cabral on the right. And that's kind of the idea. Option number two, the Rapids are going to roll out a 3-4-2-1, which effectively means they're kind of like four-ish midfielders. There's two guys in the middle, one's kind of more of a defensive mid, and one's more of a shuttling mid. And that would pretty much in this lineup look like either Larraz and Bassett or Ronan and Bassett. And then in front of them are two attacking midfielders. And in this lineup, those two guys are going to be Mihailovic and Cabral, or Mihailovic and DiPietro. And so that's these are all very interesting possibilities. DiPietro, I think one of the best things about him coming over from DC is that for DC, they kind of needed him on the field every week because DC wasn't very good. Beyond Christian Benteke, that team was not very strong. They were really lacking at a lot of different positions. This year, with the Colorado Rapids, there are a lot of potential midfielders that can do a job and will be very good. I think the real question for me is Ku DiPietro going to be able to kind of like bend in balls, possess? Is he passy enough? Because I've always seen him as a possession kind of guy. And I don't know that that was what I was looking for in another player. I think Mihailovic is a phenomenal possession kind of guy. I think Bassett is a phenomenal dribbly possession kind of guy. I wasn't really thinking that another guy like that was what the doctor ordered. I kind of thought we really needed another kind of Kevin Cabral rocket from down under kind of like guy who is just going to tax the back line with really pacey runs and is going to threaten the goal. But I guess that's not what they're going for. So it'll be really interesting to see how they want to play, if they're going to use him as a regular starter or if DiPietro is coming off the bench mostly and is going to kind of serve as a mix in. It's really interesting. It was not at all on my dance card. I was not expecting this at all. I don't totally hate it, but I'm also a little bit confused in that it dictates a little bit, I think, how they're going to play as opposed to opening up more possibilities.
So, Mark, a couple thoughts here. First of all, I will say this acquisition has very much a similar energy to Kellen Acosta or, say, Austin Trusty, where it's homegrown, that kind of comes good, plays well enough to stick around with the team, but isn't necessarily going to be the centerpiece. And then the Rapids kind of get a distressed asset. So, you know, revenge of the distressed asset Misfit Toys FC that I think certainly fits that. I wouldn't say that DiPietro was on the coup. DiPietro was on the outs necessarily with DC United, but I think the fact that he didn't get more minutes going from his breakout season in 2023 to 2024 is maybe a little bit of a signal there. And certainly the fact that Porrick Smith, listeners, was on the committee, the rules committee, that helped organize the idea of the interleague transfers. This had to have been something Porrick was thinking, hey, who could we get maybe for cash that would be easier for us to do that with the ownership situation or with the Bombito money that would be easier for us to get within the league rather than giving up league-based assets. So here's his stats, Mark. So again, signed in 2020 at the beginning of the year, spent most of 2020, 2021, and I believe 2022, at least part of that, with Loudon, so what's now the MLS Next Pro affiliate of DCU. Played 200 minutes for the first team in 2022, but then in 2023, he played in 26 games. He had 12 starts, 5 goals, 3 assists. That's great as a first-year breakout year as what, a 21-year-old? Not bad at all. And then this past season, with a bit of an injury, he would have played 1,876 minutes. First of all, Mark, that is the year Colorado became a state, so I think that has to be, you know, a little bit of a fun little signal there. 24 Ridiculous. Appearances. 24 starts, 29 appearances. This is just in league play, listeners, and he had 2 goals and 4 assists. Now, he did have an injury, Mark. He did have to have surgery, I believe, on his shoulder over the offseason, and a few weeks ago, Troy Lesane described him as being out a couple of months. So I don't know. I highly doubt that DiPietro is playing in this upcoming Leagues Cup. Is he ready by the end of March? Is he ready come April? All, I think, valid questions. My understanding as well, Mark, that I don't know where DC United is doing their preseason. My understanding is he is already down in Florida, and he is in place to where if and when this deal is ready, when the Rapids arrive, he'll already be in camp and ready for the first team as well. To your point, Mark, about maybe style of play, if you look at, and Matt Doyle from MLSsoccer.com had a fantastic post about this, listeners, with his FB ref numbers. He presses a lot. He's really, really good in possession in terms of, I would say, his XG numbers are better than his expected assist numbers. So he's almost a goal dangerous winger, where I would say all of the other wingers for the Rapids, they are better in terms of creating chances or passing for somebody else than their own goal chance creation. Omar Fernandez, Mark, we've talked about how he was a little snake bitten with his finishing, but he could find Rafael Navajo. We talked about Kevin Cabral, who is very direct, who could facilitate the attack, not necessarily be on the end product, drew a lot of penalties. We talk about Calvin Harris, who loves to cut inside, maybe nutmeg a player, maybe break the ankles of a Francisco Calvo, for example, in Leafs Cup, but isn't necessarily, I think it was 3 goals, 5 assists, or I might have that number transposed. So to your point, Mark, I think, unfortunately, we like Kevin Cabral, especially now that he's a domestic player. He's not going to be an international player. Mark, we've heard rumblings that at some point there's either going to be a rule change or we'll be late enough in the calendar year to where Kevin's salary that he has left to be paid will be below the DP threshold to where then he could be tamable partway through the season. Taking the DP tag off, I think, changes the expectations or the judgment that Rapids fans would have on one Kevin Cabral. But then you've got, on the other wing, Omer Fernandez, Calvin Harris, Kamani Stewart-Baines, and Ted Koo DiPietro, all 4 of whom do a lot of things similar, Mark. Kevin Cabral is the most outlier of that group of 5, and I don't know that TKD, if we're calling him that, is different enough from those guys. And so, Mark, I think if we were to take the best of Calvin Harris and the best of Omer Fernandez and the best of this guy and the best of KSB and put them all together, I think we would have a fantastic right-winging starter who is a good foil to Kevin Cabral. Where my concern is, I think they're similar enough to each other that is it 6 of one, half dozen of another? Or is there that much of a difference? Now, the counter-argument to this, Mark, going back to a podcast concept that I had this time last year when we weren't sure that Moise Bombito was going to do what he ended up doing, is that we knew what we had in Andreas Mexu, we knew what we had in Lalas Abubakar, and the Rapids had 4 or 5 other young center bats. We'll talk about Daniel Chacon in a moment, but basically they had 4 or 5 youngsters, one of them was going to hit, and all you need is one of them to hit, and you're good at that position. And if they hit big, you get a big cash transfer, you can bring in another guy, or one of those other guys can hit. I think between Ian Murphy, Mike Edwards, Nate Jones in the future, Matthew Sonosu, the Rapids are eventually going to have another center back that's maybe not Moise Bombito, but maybe slightly better than Lalas Abubakar. All you need is one of these 4 guys to hit. Omer Fernandez, second year under Chris Armas, Mark, has to be better. Calvin Harris just came off of his best season in Major League Soccer, MLS season in which he got more minutes than he ever got in FC Cincinnati. KSB, second year professional. Kudipietro coming into a new system. Chris Armas loves working with young players, have some familiarity with him. The analytics team at the Rapids front office really, really likes him as well. Like, one of those is going to work. One of those is going to be a viable replacement or just above replacement right winger. Now, give my other question here, Mark, is given the amount of money they spent, it's kind of similar to Jonathan Lewis, where what do you have from an expectation standpoint? Because, you know, $1.1 million wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't nothing. I don't know, Mark, if the Rapids were trying to trade Calvin Harris right now, would they get $1 million from GAM? I don't know the answer to that question. So there is a little bit of an expectation. But then to your point as well, Rabbi, they spent all that money. And so now we know some of that, you know, there was a good chunk of GAM that went to FC Cincinnati. We know, or we strongly believe, that that some of the Moise Bombito money got converted to GAM. So if we're doing this, Mark, purely from the Rapids had three holes to fill this offseason. They got a big check from a French club from Moise Bombito in order to fill that. They've done that at the center back position, spent some of that Moise Bombito transfer fee into GAM, spent some of that GAM getting two center backs from FC Cincinnati, spent some straight cash homie to DC United. But even then, Mark, we're looking at what? Maybe $2.5 million at this point total, or you know, if we're including incentives and a few other things as well, and maybe the international spot for Cheeto, you know, maybe we get up to $2 million as well. Where did the rest of that money go? So my big question that I have remaining, Rabbi, is what are the Rapids doing, given they have an open international slot now potentially with Daniel Chacon leaving the club? Are they spending that international slot and some of that money on the number six position, the one hole that they haven't filled? That has me, Mark, go from the Rapids offseason going from probably a B to a B minus to definitely an A of filling their big holes. But I do think there are some expectations on Kudipietro given the price tag that it came with it. And good on ownership for writing that check mark, even if it was allocating some of the money that came from Bombito. Anything else, Kudipietro, we want to talk, Rabbi, or shall we move on to Daniel Chacon?
I just want to comment really quickly that, like, my feeling is that I was surprised by the Kudipietro addition just because I was starting to think that the Rapids were pretty much done. I think the Rapids are probably done. I think they've stacked their GAM and TAM for midseason acquisitions. My guess is that they're going to pull what I would refer to as a Seattle Sounders, and that's because Seattle has often been a team that made their move in the middle of the summer, or they kind of like rid off the first half of the season so they could do something in the middle. I feel like maybe the Rapids are kind of like gearing up for a mid-season move right now, and they're pretty much full up at a lot of positions. I think the other reason that I think that is that they've, you know, moved from Mexico to Florida. They've looked at what their youth players, their academy players, their R2 players, and their draft picks can or might contribute. They've made plans about them, they've made decisions about them, and they probably don't want to get some guy off the European transfer list right now and then you know, kind of scramble things up based on plans of it. I could be wrong. They might make one more acquisition before they come back to Colorado in a couple weeks and kick things off against LAFC, but this is where I think we are. I think this is the team that we are going to battle with. I think all of your comments, Matt, about Cabral and Kudipietro and money, I think that all is really important and relevant, but I just think it all means they're starting to stack their chips to figure out what to do in July and August, not what to do for the next week or two. I think the other reason for that is that Kudipietro is a U22 initiative player. So that means that slot is closed for now. I think the Rapids might have, I think they've used all, they have, according to my records, three U22 initiative players, which I think is as many as they're allowed to have right now. It doesn't mean they couldn't move somebody off into a different place. They do have the money to be able to do that. And Cole Bassett is eventually going to age out of that position, not immediately, but, soon. So the three U22 players, according to my records, are Cole Bassett, Kudipietro, and Sam Vines. And Sam would be the first to age out because he's actually already 25 years old. I think this is the last age calendar year he's allowed to be counted under those numbers. Last thing I'll say is this. According to my records, after the sale of the mutual termination of Daniel Chacon's contract, which Matt is going to talk about in a second. The Rapids have, according to my records, 2 open international slots.
Is that including, is that with Cabral getting his green card being the other one, Mark?
That's correct. So the okay. four, there are, the Rapids have traded 2 spots, and they have 4 players occupying the remaining overall 6 slots. That's Maxo, Navajo, Ronan, and Awazium.
So the only other thing, Mark, as far as the U22 DP math, is that's where if there's a point this calendar year in which Kevin Cabral becomes Tamable, then the Rapids could use Tam on Cabral, and that would free up a DP slot, Mark, nice. And they could either go sign another DP, or they could do the 2 and 4. It's 3 and 3 between listeners between DPs and U22 slots,
that's
or you
right.
can do 2 and 4. So, Mark, if potentially they don't want to spend DP money salary or transfer fee-wise, then that frees it up. And so to your point as well, Mark, if we're talking about the Rapids actually gearing up or looking at the market being better in the summer, if they wanted to bring in a U22 player or a DP and have them be international, it's probably easier for them to do that in the summer than it right. is for them to do that in this winter.
As and frustrating, by the way, I was going to say, Coup de Pietro isn't like the world's most financially efficient usage of the U22 initiative spot, because he's earning $356,000 this year, according to his salary data. And the budget charge on a U22 player is $200,000. So
yeah.
he's only using that spot is only saving the Rapids $156,000. And they really do have that money in cap space anyways. So
yeah. Whereas opposed to it's what I think Sam Vines and Cole Bassett are both at like 700, 800K. So then combined nice. Between those two, you're paying, you're saving what? 600 to 800K on that yep. as well, as opposed to the and, 150.
Yeah. Sam's on 862 and Cole's at 850, which means whenever they go out to dinner, this must be really frustrating for Cole. Whenever the two go out for dinner, Sam has to pay because he makes $12,000 more than Cole does. That must be really annoying for Cole.
It's probably annoying because Cole knows that he's a better player than Sam after last
Oh my time. God! You didn't! That was savage.
Listeners!
Sam, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm so, so sorry, and I'm not sure I agree.
Tell me I'm wrong. Listeners, Colorado Rapids have parted ways with Daniel Chacon, who, says the guy in the back, Mark, this guy never played for the Rapids first team. He was brought in just before the World Cup in the winter of 2022 as a Rapids 2 player, and then he got loaned out to his native Costa Rica to play with Alajuelense. I believe the club that he was a youth player for. He tore his ACL there. He signed a first team deal. The Rapids were committed to him completing his rehab and believing that he still had a potential there. And then he spent the first half of 2024 rehabbing and then was basically just a training body and never actually played for the first team. He was taking up a international roster slot. The Rapids have mutually parted ways with him. And I believe, Mark, there's already rumblings that might have already been official by now. He has re-signed with Alajuelense, who he played before and was on loan from Rapids 2 as well. Mark, chalk this up with, I would say, this is in the Abubakar Keita, Brian Galvan category of, I think, the Rapids taking a flyer on a guy that nobody else had on their radar. I should say, listeners, they did not pay. I do not believe there was a transfer fee for Daniel Chacon, or if there was, it was not a whole lot of money, and they weren't paying him a whole lot because he was on a Rapids 2 salary, and then he was making like 100, maybe 150K. So this isn't a Sidney Tavares situation in terms of a salary standpoint, and there wasn't a net loss here in terms of a transfer fee. This was paid, but Mark, this just stacked this up on another list of guys that the organization, scouting-wise, thought they had a really, really smart, really, really cheap gem in, never came good, and at this point is going to be a trivia answer. Like, Mark, I would not be shocked if 50% of the listeners listening to this right now have no idea who we're talking about.
No. Right. It was not, I mean, I think, you know, I won't say too much about this move. It was not a surprise. Like, this is not the first time the Rapids have brought on a guy, seen him do almost nothing, not really used him, gotten rid of him. I mean, that was basically what happened with, oh my God, I can't even remember. Who was I was going to say. No. There was a, who was the attacker we brought from Europe last year who people. He was a defensive midfielder. Everyone was really excited
about
him.
Oh, Lamine Diop.
Yeah, Lamine Diop. Like, he never, ever, ever made any impression on this
team.
Okay,
but he was on TAM. Like, Mark, I make more money than Daniel Tricona's made for the Colorado Rapids in 1 year.
Right, exactly. I mean, like that, but that being said, like, you know, a guy comes on, and you're like, ooh, this guy could be a thing, and and then nothing happens, and that's fine. And you take a flyer, it doesn't pan out, everything works out in the end, so... nothing ventured, nothing gained. It was a good try. You know, a similar story to like Kip Colvey, you know, going back in the memory banks to a player who the Rapids tried out and it didn't really work out. And we wish him well.
Are we including Declan Wynn in this category, Mark?
Declan Wynn played for almost a whole season starting at left back. And by the way, the only reason I know that is I looked this up a couple weeks ago. And I was actually surprised. I was like, wow, Declan Wynn really did get a lot of minutes for us. And there are other players where I'm like, I'd wish to think that he didn't play much for us, but he did. Like, I just looked up Tony Cascio. And I was like, did Tony Cascio have any time with the Rapids? Like, yeah, he played like 22 games. He played most. And then another guy who I was thinking of, that was Kamani Hill. Kamani Hill is a long time ago. It was 2013. But like, I was like, did Kamani Hill, was he, I vaguely remember him playing for the team. Like, yeah, he had minutes. He had a lot of minutes. He was a real player.
Maybe there's like a...
Not Chacon. Chacon was a guy who none of us will remember in 5 years.
Okay, this is like a Mike DeFont or a...
DeFont played minutes. DeFont was bad.
Okay, yeah.
DeFont was memorably bad. That was the problem with Mike DeFont. You say what you will about Mike DeFont, but at least he played, right? He was bad, but he played. But you know,
say
we
what
not
you
be...
will about Joe Nasko. He played more minutes than Daniel Chacon for the Colorado Rapids.
That's right. That's
all
right.
6 seconds. Okay. Okay. So Mark, there's a lot of stress or there's a lot of consternation about that. And maybe there is some brain fog associated with Daniel Chacon, either of remembering him or frustration that Rapids fans or people at the club will have about that. And in order to get a clearer mind or get a better understanding, or at least be able to emotionally move on from that, Mark, how could Rapids fans be able to get over this player that they've never known in Daniel Tricone? Maybe with a little help from...
If I had drunk my magic mind at this time of the evening, I would have known that you were trying to throw to me to talk about magic mind. Magic mind is great project, Matt. Tell us all about it.
January did just end, but we and Magic Mind are still obviously celebrating National Mental Wellness Month. Longtime listeners, you've heard me talk about my journey in mental wellness, my issues with brain fog, issues collectively, Mark, staying on the same topic and not going off on random tangents on the podcast. Your mental wellness affects your performance in a podcast setting, in your relationships, in your professional life, and it really gets down to getting the core principles of your mental health and your mental wellness journey right. And that includes your sleep, your diet, exercise, managing your stress, maybe going to therapy, maybe getting medication after being diagnosed with something in therapy. It all adds up, and you have to do that over an extended period of time in order for that to help. Magic Mind has just launched their 24-hour pack that includes their focus shots for during the day or in the morning and their sleep shots for the end of the night as well. So you can take one in the morning, one in the evening, and be all good for that 24-hour period. And that can help you with your sleep. That can help you with focus during the day. I take it without caffeine because I'm caffeine sensitive. Mark takes it with his coffee as a little pick-me-up as well. It can help you at 3 p.m. when you're working. It can help you with stress. There's a lot going on in the world right now. It is not January anymore. Just because it's February doesn't mean that you shouldn't still be taking your mental health and your mental wellness right. So check out the link in the show notes for more information. You'll get 45% off your first order. If you're still looking for a New Year's resolution or maybe a February resolution, this is your sign. Join us in being more mentally well today with Magic Mind. Mark, any other thoughts you have on taking it for the last couple of months and really seeing the impact stack up over an extended period of time as opposed to just taking it once in a while?
I love the flavor. I love the fact that it kind of gives me a mellow buzz to my coffee instead of getting this kind of like chattery, nervous kind of thing. I like the vitamins that it adds to things. It tastes healthy. It feels healthy. I like that there is a small community of people out there who are drinking Magic Mind, and so I'm not the only one. So it's a really good kind of thing to hear lots of people trying and that it has real benefits that make folks feel brighter, more chipper, more aware, more focused to go about their day.
With that, Mark, let's move on to the preseason. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the team was out training on the turf fields by where the tailgates happen earlier today. The club is in, I believe, until tomorrow, Mark. I think that's when they're leaving Florida. But Rabbi, we have not podcasted since the team got back from Mexico, in which they played three closed-door scrimmages, and we have some information about that, Mark. I've already broken down in my articles on Burgundy Wave about how it was mostly some hybrid lineups, or it wasn't properly a first team starts the first half, second team starts the second half. But in any case, Mark, in chronological order, they got a 2-2 draw against Celaya that included a goal from Josh Copeland, the rookie who's with R2, and that was by Rafael Navajo, and then the Bassets, Cole assisted Sam to get the equalizer in that. Then they played their only Liga MX opposition of the preseason. Rafael Navajo scored a goal in a 1-1 draw in which Colorado was leading for most of that 120 minutes, and then a bit of a fumble at the back by a collection of young players and maybe a trialist, Mark, who's going to sign with Rapids 2 now in order to concede that lead there. And then it was a fantastic first half in a 3-0 victory over La Paz this past Friday. Navajo scored twice. There was a goal in transition. There was a goal that he scored off of a really good pressing sequence. And then Georgi Mihailovic banged in a free kick as well for good measure on that no longer bad right angle of his. Mark, I tend to read too much into preseason, or I make too much of the information that the club puts out there publicly, which may or may not be curated to make them look good or not reveal certain information, like whether they're in the 4-2-3-1 or the 3-4-3. Mark, you are generally a curmudgeon when it comes to the preseason, or at the very least, the preseason doesn't matter until it does. Mark, what, if anything, do you take away from the preseason stint in Mexico, and should we not care about it at all?
I was less of a curmudgeon when I could watch the games, when I could even watch anything other than highlights, but now it's so embargoed. That's not really the right word, but it feels like the right word. Embargoed is this very weird technical journalistic term for we are going to give you a piece of information so you can start to write an article about it, but you can't release your article until 1 p.m. when we say officially what happens. And these aren't embargoed. They're just, there's like no information. So lots of people have been talking about like the new formation the Rapids are going to use. And I'm like, is there a new formation the Rapids are going to use? I haven't heard that. I don't know that. People are like, well, yeah, I looked on the lineup sheet and it looks like they're playing this. And I was like, did you? Do we know that? Do I know anything? I don't know anything. Right? Like,
if
so,
nothing else, Mark, when the team was in Arizona, they would have the Desert Diamond Cup. They had the Armadillo Trophy, and at least like those games would be streamed on some grainy YouTube feed. So at the very least, like, we could see them play, like, you know, a hodgepodge Rapids lineup against, like, Houston Dynamo's Reserve League and Coco Carrasquilla balls out. But, yeah, to your point, Rabbi.
And you could see who was combining, and you could see, like, how high up the pitch they were playing, and you could see how much they were pressing. You could see little things that they were working on, you know? It didn't make sense in the aggregate. You couldn't paint broad strokes about, like, what the team was going to be doing. But you could kind of get some ideas about, like, some things that they were playing with. You can't do that now. You can't do that from like an 8-second clip, shaky, you know, cell phone photo over Sam Bassett's right shoulder of, you know, some academy player making a run into the box. Like, we just don't know anything. So what we do know, you know, one of the things that was really valuable from the Burgundy Sky was folks were picking up that, like, Darren Yappe hadn't featured in any matches. And so Matt had to ask the front office, hey, what's going on with Darren Yappe? He hasn't played any matches. We could see, it was really interesting for me to see that because both of the Rapid starting goalkeepers were not available at all in Mexico because both were with their respective national teams, the senior national team and the youth national team, that the Rapids had to call in an academy player and then basically a trialist to come down and play goalkeeper, which starts to help us to figure out who the Rapids are going to go out and sign as their third goalkeeper, because they need a third goalkeeper because they don't have one right now on the roster. They have a couple. They have a guy from R2. They have a guy from the academy, but they don't have. So those are some little things. And then also like seeing which trialists, draft picks came down and started. It gave us a sense of which of these guys were going to be going back to college, which of these guys was potentially going to get signed to an R2 or senior contract. So those were valuable, but other than that, we didn't really. That's all worthwhile. That's not nothing. But it doesn't really tell us much. Like, you know, it didn't tell us most importantly, the thing that we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is what formation are they going to play? Do they need wingers? Is the attack going to be mostly central, or is it going to be wide? You know, how many players at the back are we going to need? Is Keegan Rosenberry going to move inside as a center back? Is Reggie Cannon going to move inside as a center back? Those are all really big questions that we might be able to be talking about on this podcast if the team would stream a game for us, but they haven't.
On the plus side there, Mark, if we're guessing these questions as well, chances are LAFC is also guessing these for CONCACAF champions and maybe even St. Louis as well for the season opener. So all good secrets, Mark, that make it. I can understand the thought process of the club, Mark, given the limitations that they might have with the Apple TV agreement to where it's not worth it for them to set up with that. And maybe there's a competitive advantage for that. But at the same time, Mark, I would argue I was fully prepared, Rabbi, to come on this show without a U22 winger signing and to straight up say, like, I'm not, like, I still feel like it's the offseason because they haven't made a big signing. And I don't think they filled the two big holes that they still had left to do. And I feel like so many other teams in MLS, or at least the Western Conference, have improved and spent a bunch of money. I know LA Galaxy are shuffling the deck as well. But Mark, I was fully prepared to say, like, I'm not jazzed because I think the team's going to get wrecked by LAFC and CONCACAF champions. And if you told me right now they're going to be battling for seventh because they didn't sign a winger and they didn't sign a D-mid and their one Georgi Mihailovic hamstring injury, knock on wood, away from like really having their attack going down, just not being juiced for it as well. And I can see where the Rapids fan who's just looking at social media content or the random little tidbit that the club's putting out, but not actually having a game to watch, that for them, like the 14th, the 18th of February is going to be the start of preseason because there's going to actually be a game. And prior to that, there's just been so little. So for the sickos out there, we empathize with you of wanting literally anything for the club. And it's great that we get 4-minute highlight packages and a few other little things here and some off the season banter as well. But if you compare that to years past where there was the Desert Diamond Cup, or I remember, Mark, they played Las Vegas Lights in a friendly down in Las Vegas and a lot of fans drove that as well. Like the fact that there's no preseason game for you to see at Dick's, or there's no one that's plausible for you to travel, or there's none that are even just open to the public. And there's the absence of the live feed as well for you to watch randomly, you know, on a Saturday at 10 a.m., for example, that it's hard for you. You feel disconnected from the club, or you're wanting more from it. To use the Jose Mourinho club right now, Mark, I suppose you're still in love with the Colorado Rapids. You love your club, but you're not in love with the club right now. And you're waiting for them to ask you, you know, to go get dinner and to wine and dine you on February 18th. On that, Mark, let's talk about a competition that the Colorado Rapids will not be playing in, and that is the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. MLS Comms put out a thing on January 28th, Mark, and there's a bunch of rules. Basically, listeners, there's formatting needs for the U.S. Open Cup and for League Cup and for CONCACAF champions, and in order to make it quote-unquote fair and have people spread out throughout the competitions and have some compromise without completely punting on the Open Cup and pissing off their audience, there's a few conditions here, one of which is the first teams of each club will participate in no more than two of these cup competitions. So Colorado Rapids finished in the top half of the Supporters Shield last year, so they qualified for League's Cup. They obviously finished in third in League's Cup last year, which got them a CONCACAF Champions bid. Therefore, the first team is not eligible for the U.S. Open Cup. Based on that, listeners, with the number of teams that qualify for Open Cup, and a thing that, to be fair, MLS cannot control, U.S. Soccer handled the qualifications and the conditions and the how many teams and the what rounds and what match days do they enter in for that. In order to make the math work, only so many first teams were also put in Open Cup based on who qualified for CONCACAF Champions and who qualified for League's Cup. And then the numbers are made up from MLS Next Pro. And then based on that, there were a few clubs that were left out to where they had more clubs that had MLS Next Pro or more MLS teams that if they were going to be in Open Cup, it had to be the Next Pro teams. Then they had teams left to be in Open Cup, if that makes sense. And the way it appears that that was decided is based on the performance of those Next Pro teams last year. If you don't remember Rapids 2 being any good or getting any wins or posting stuff on social or making a big deal about coming out to games, it's because they were very, very bad. They were one of the three worst MLS-affiliated teams and MLS Next Pro, so therefore them and Atlanta, and I can't remember who was the third team, were cut from the MLS Next Pro qualification of U.S. Open Cup. Therefore, the first team, having qualified for CONCACAF Champions and Leagues Cup, can't be in Open Cup, and Rapids 2 did not play in this as well. Mark, for me, I suppose it's better than what it was last year. I'm glad that there are more MLS teams in the US Open Cup. The fact that there are MLS teams who don't have any representation in this doesn't signal to me this is not an open, quote unquote, Open Cup. And that annoys me as well. And I do find it wonky that the performance of your MLS Next Pro team from last year can disqualify you from the Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. That being said, if this is the closest that we're going to get, because the MLS executives don't care what I think, and I'm the Grinch who wants to cancel Leagues Cup, even though the Rapids finished in third in Leagues Cup last year, if this is what we have to do so that there is some MLS first team representation in the Open Cup, I can find a way to peace with this, or at the very least, I can understand that my purest view of how the game should be run is not how the suits who are focused on dollars and cents are going to run it. What say you, fellow grumpy Muppet in the mezzanine level, Rabbi Mark Goodman?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first year ever that there are no Colorado Rapids teams competing in Open Cup, and that's kind of heartbreaking. And that's really the most, that's like the top headline. The like lower headline is MLS this year sort of made some sense out of how to split Leagues Cup and Open Cup, which was they kind of decided that, like, okay, the better teams in the, like, the best teams in the league go to CONCACAF Champions Cup. The rest of the teams in the league will go to the Leagues Cup. And then if you weren't very good last year, you'll play an Open Cup. That kind of feels a little okay in the sense that, like, the Open Cup now becomes like a consolation bracket for Major League Soccer teams. And I think that there's some logic to that, except that the Colorado Rapids have never won the Open Cup. I've always wanted them to win it. And so this kind of idea that, like, I mean, I think the parallel for European fans is to say, imagine if you're a European fan, your European soccer team has like one trophy its entire history, and you have to flip a coin between playing in the UEFA Champions League and the UEFA Europa League every single year. Which one would you rather play in? And like, I would sort of make an argument that you want to play in the competition you have a better chance of winning. And I'd say of the three major trophy competitions that the Rapids are going to have the potential to compete in this year, one of which they will not. CONCACAF Champions Cup, Leagues Cup, and U.S. Open Cup. The one that I want the most is the U.S. Open Cup, which they don't get to compete in, because it's easier to get and because it's got more history to it. Leagues Cup doesn't have as much history. I don't mind winning it. It'd be great, but it's a lot harder to win because Liga MX teams are very good and they're always in their absolute best form when the competition ends, whereas MLS teams are kind of like still mid-season. You know, CCC would be an amazing thing for the Rapids to win. I am not optimistic, you know, although if they can beat LAFC in the first leg because of being at altitude and at weather and so on, maybe catch them unawares, that would be a huge opportunity. And then they can hold serve it when they go on the road to LA. Then the week after that, they play what looks right now like a depleted Columbus Crew, because Columbus Crew, it was announced today, lost their best attacker in Cucho Hernandez. So that's a really interesting move, but I just did three cardinal sins that Chris Armas would never ever do, which was I didn't just look past the first game the Rapids are going to play. I looked past the second game the Rapids are going to play and all the way to their third. So but yeah, I'm with you. I'm sad. I'm going to be watching the Open Cup. I'll probably be covering the Open Cup here in Pittsburgh since they always need us to cover midweek some of the early rounds. As long as I'm available, I'll be out at our local Highmark Stadium covering those matches. So,
hey, Mark, if nothing else, the Colorado Rapids cannot be cup set by a USL team this year in the Open Cup because they're not even in it. And that just frees everybody up to root for Colorado Springs Switchbacks because I'm not confident Hailstorm are going to exist and therefore not be eligible for said Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. So, Mark, I would like to motion now, we here, by unanimous consent, holding the high line, puts all of their energy, all of their chutzpah, all of their Open Cup desires towards Switchbacks winning a second major trophy.
I'm all in.
Mark, let's talk about injuries. So, as I mentioned, got to go out and watch a little bit of training today. And we got some information, the two big injuries that the Rapids have right now in preseason. I'm not aware of any other major ones here. Sam Vines, as I reported last week, had a quad injury that kept him out of the final friendly in Mexico. And then Darren Yapi did not appear in any of the three preseason friendlies so far down in Mexico. So Sam Vines has a quad injury. My understanding is that he will be available by that second game that the Rapids will play. The Rapids first team will play down in Florida. That is on February 11th. And then Darren Yapi was described in a few different ways by Chris Armas, Mark, as being out potentially months. And then at some point he said that this could be through the end of March or into early April. And this was a shoulder injury. I did not get word, Mark, that there was a significant surgery or procedure that had to happen with that, Mark. But in any case, Sam Vines is on the mend. They still have Reggie Cannon, who can play on both sides. They still have Keegan Rosenberry, who they've played out of position at left back as well, and he should be available for the 11th. So presumably available for February 18th when they play LAFC. And maybe, Mark, this is a signal as to why Alex Harris has gotten so much of a run with the first team, despite being a GA kid who could get more minutes in the macro over the course of the season with Rapids 2, is he's taking the Darren Yapi, 75th, 80th minute sub role right now that Yapi was filling in last year for Rafael Navajo. There was one other thing that I saw, Mark. I saw some people speculating Andreas Maxu was a substitute about halfway through the first half in one of the games down in Mexico, and I heard that he had a little bit of a bug, a sickness that he's now over, and he practiced fully today. So I was at first team training earlier today, listeners, and the only players who were in any way limited were Sam Vines and Darren Yapi. So that's a clean bill of health, Mark. Kevin Cabral has joined the team after being back in France to deal with his green card as well. So I assume everybody's ready and available. And the only other one is Ted Cudipietro, who presumably is in a hotel somewhere in South Florida waiting to join his potentially future first team teammates. Mark, what do we make of the Yapi and the Vines injuries? And what do you think this means for the club, either tactically or any concerns about the start of the season? The fact that it could be Alex Harris as opposed to the, hey, I occasionally score a goal and it's awesome, but I also go months without scoring a goal that is Darren Yapi.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, I think I mind it. Early season injuries are early season injuries. Like hamstrings are tight. Muscle groups that haven't been actively worked enough lead to like hip injuries and other things because guys are exacerbating ligaments that are doing work that normally muscles would do, or muscles are pulling on ligaments because they're overstretched and overexcited that are not ready to do the job. Do I sound like a physical therapist husband? I am. So those early season injuries are pretty common. We just hope that they kind of shake out. The only thing we want to hope and avoid, and there's no reason to think that this would be the case, is that somebody spent the offseason getting out of form and didn't go into their trainer enough and comes back and hurts himself. And this is, of course, the Shkelzengashi problem, which is like guys who partied a little bit too hard on their yachts in Dubai and did not take the offseason seriously. I'm not worried about that. I think Sam Vines has always been a stand-up dude and really talented guy. Darren Yapi's way too young for shenanigans to get his well-toned body out of shape this early to start the season. So they'll whip back into shape. They'll be fine. They may miss the opener, and that's okay. These are two players we wouldn't want to be without Sam Vines, but we can probably make do without him because we actually have some coverage at fullback right now. And there are a lot of other options at attacking and wide positions for Darren Yapi. So we'll see.
Mark, as you see, I'm posting photos now on social, listeners, but I'm currently rocking my lime green kind of foresty tiger forest green Rovers kit from a few years ago, Mark. And that is a highlighter green. And that's because we've gotten a few signals about the new secondary kit the Rapids will be wearing. Mark, they dropped a nice little video of an outdoorsy car driving and had kind of a highlighter green kayak, and since then, unfortunately, there's been a lot of leaks about kits, and the signal that we have here, Mark, is that there's going to be a two-tone green kit, one with very much the darker Class 5 kit that would be, I guess it will be, two away kits ago when this new kit launches, and the other kind of a lighter green. Full disclosure, listeners, when I had hinted in the past that I had heard about color scheme and I had referred to the color being something that the Rapids had not worn before, I was referring to the more highlighter green one. I was under the impression that it was closer to say what Juarez wore, if you remember their like super in your face lime green kits that they wore for the League's Cup game back in August that would have been at Dick's Sporting Park. So that's a little bit of a tease there, Mark, that we might get two tones there. Put out a couple comments on social to see, to get a barometer of what Rapids fans are thinking. And one of the concerns, Mark, is that maybe it's going to be a little plain in that one of the greens is going to be featured and the other is going to be a highlight to that, like we see with the Adidas stripes or maybe the collar or maybe the jock tag. And then just kind of the concern that maybe it's going to be really, really similar, but maybe a less fun, detailed version of the Class 5 kit. Mark, we're going to wait for the kit launch, obviously. You and I, as a member of the media, might get a little bit of a play into early on some embargoed information as it relates to the mission statement that comes with the kit that I've not heard. I haven't heard what it is, but I've heard that some people at the club think it's bigger than what they've done the last two kits, so bigger than helping the game be more accessible to kids in and around Dick's Sporting Goods Park in those communities, a la the One Flag kit, and bigger than what they did with the New Day kit, which had a mental wellness component to it as well. Mark, what do you make? Or at the very least, like, it's a kit, it's a green kit that says Rapids, and on some level, the nostalgia vein, the nostalgia gene in both of us is going to be triggered in a positive way.
I saw that there was like 5 ripples that looked like come up, and people were making fun of it like it's bacon.
Yes.
It kind of looks like curly bacon. I like the idea of the green bacon kit. That maybe that's the nickname that we're going to go with. But I know nothing. I hear nothing. I see nothing. I look forward to this one. You know, me and Matt are huge kit aficionados. A friend of Matt's before the podcast was making fun of him for having a just way he this person called Matt a hoarder because he has 70 jerseys in his closet, and I was kind of like, no, that's just what men do with soccer things. We hoard scarves, we hoard soccer jerseys, we love that stuff. We don't know how to get rid of these things. My whole closet is full of soccer jerseys, and I only wear like one a month at the top. So I got friends who give me soccer jerseys that I will never wear. My favorite is an old friend, a congregant up in Steamboat Springs, gave me one of his old Chelsea kits from the early 90s. It's like a 1989 kit. Like, what am I going to do with that? I'm never going to wear it. But of course, I display it proudly in my closet.
Mark, I need to hit up Michael Azira. He never sent me anything. He sent you a bunch of game-worn kits. I need something.
Just one.
I feel like I'm close enough with Drew Moore. Like, there could be a throwaway, you know, secondary kit.
You should
like
get a Cronin. You should get a Sam Cronin. That's what you should do. You rocking the Cronin and me walking the Azira, and we're full-blown defensive midfielder Bash Brothers from 2015. It's phenomenal.
That would be great, Mark. I don't know. Sam Cronin's not big on social media. I wouldn't say that.
His wife is. His wife is very active on Facebook. So, and her name, by the way, Samantha Cronin, if you didn't know that. Samantha.
Okay.
Sam.
So there's Sam,
Sam
and Samantha?
Sam and Sam.
Okay.
Isn't that adorable?
That's nice. I'm making the long play, Mark, for Cole Bassett probably to give me like the final kit that he wore because I've covered him his entire career and I'm not leaving. I'm gonna die in the press box at Dick's Sporting
Goods
Park.
If the Rapids play Cruz Azul at some point this season in Leagues Cup or something like that, you'll get to meet Vicente Sanchez, former Colorado Rapids player in 2013 and 2014, and you can ask him for a kit. So, because he's the head coach of Cruz Azul now, which makes for some really interesting, it's just an amazing thing that, like, yeah.
I know what I want, Mark. I 100% bet I could DM Dom Baji right now and he would send me some of his old Rapid stuff.
Wow.
That's
nice.
What we're going to do. Okay. Mark, so we're done talking about the rumored kit and everything. We are going to withhold judgment until we've gotten to actually physically seeing it up close. As we've talked about, we're kit aficionados. I want to see it from the wide shot. I want to see it in good lighting. I want to see it up close. I want to see what it looks like on TV. I want to see what it looks like from 20 rows up, you know, in a player standing at center midfield. And really, listeners, like, it could be the most plainest, whitest kit ever. It could be a boring thing. It could be the exact same kit as 10 other MLS teams are wearing as their secondary kit. But if there was a good mission behind it that I felt was a net positive towards that, I could get behind that, even if it's a plain kit. So it's green. We'll see what happens. And we'll talk about it once we're officially allowed to talk about it, embargoes or otherwise. Mark, also, the club announced a bunch of activations that they're going to have. I forgot about this, Mark. I guess I'm bad at counting like the number of seasons for the number of calendar years. This is the 30th season of the Colorado Rapids, or the 30th year, I should say. And there's a bunch of things that are going to happen throughout the year. The club's got a bunch of theme nights that they're going to announce. Activations is the word that they like to use internally for some of the things that they have. And the big one that got announced earlier today, Mark, at time of recording, was that they will be retiring Marcelo Balboa's number 17 to go along, Mark, with a few years ago when they would have retired Pablo Mastroianni's number 25. Mark, you and I both know Cello. Obviously, we were new enough to MLS to where we didn't actually physically see him play when he was with the Rapids, but we've interacted with him in media. He is a very, very, for what he's done, Mark, both for the club and for the national team and for soccer in America, he could not be more humble. He could not be more approachable. He could not be more gracious with his time talking to the plebe nerds up in the press box or a random fan who recognizes him but has never actually met him. He's been nothing but gracious with our time. He's been nothing but a good ambassador for the sport and for the club. He's obviously now doing media stuff, Spanish language with Apple TV and everything. We had the Marcelo Balboa Derby last year when the Rapids played Club León, his Mexican team club, in League's Cup as well. And I could not think of a more fitting player, Mark. We talked about, I think we did a Mount Rushmore and a Best 11 discussion topic during lockdown and COVID. And there was a back and forth about you Rapids fans could argue Mastroianni 1, Marcelo Balboa number 2. I think most fans would mark now would say Drew Moore 3, but there's no question those are the first number 2. If you're going to put two people in the gallery honor or on a Rapids Mount Rushmore or rename 14ers after them, even with what he's done with RSL, it's Mastroianni and Balboa. You could argue either of them, 1 or 2. And if you're going to retire two numbers, it's got to be in one order or another, 17 and 25 or vice versa. Rabbi, your thoughts?
Yeah, he's you know, consensus first team All-American. You know, he's the best of all worlds. His bicycle kick attempt in the World Cup and his successful bicycle kicks in Major League Soccer, I think he had one in 96 and another in like 98, are the stuff of legends. Go Google them. They're on the YouTubes. And there's just so much sauce there. I mean, just so much swag because he was not a striker. You know, he was a midfielder. And so for a guy like that to be like, oh, I'm going to go for a bicycle kick because it's not really what I do at my position, but I'm going to do it anyways. You know, that the locks, the beard mustache combo. I mean, like everything about Cello is kind of epic and legendary. And he's a good bloke, too. We've always had great interactions with him, you know, on the sidelines and hanging out. And so he's a good dude. Yeah, and I look forward to all the other cool stuff that the Rapids are going to do this year. The weird thing, of course, is the league was announced in 95, but it didn't start playing till 96. So MLS is just trying to find a way to milk 2 years out of a 30th anniversary. So there'll be a year's worth of 30th anniversary stuff this year with the Rapids, and then there'll be another year's worth of 30th anniversary stuff next year. So if you get confused in 2026, and you're like, hey, man, isn't this the 30th year of MLS? Didn't we just celebrate it all last year? The answer is, yeah, man, whatever. You know, like, just enjoy it. You know, it's like how people, we kind of celebrated in 2000. For those of you, some of you are too young to understand this as I make the reference. But in 2000, we were kind of celebrating that it was year 2000. But really, 2001 was the real beginning of the 21st century. So, you know, we just kind of enjoy it all.
Mark, I should say, off of a quick Google, the Colorado Rapids were officially announced as an MLS franchise on June 6th, 1995. So that will officially be their 30th birthday. And Mark, the Colorado Rapids share a birthday with D-Day, which I could not think of a more fitting thing for you and me as Band of Brother Nerds. I will say the Rapids are playing on the next day, June the 7th. They'll be playing Austin. And for those wondering, the actual jersey retirement for Marcelo Balboa, number 17, will be on August 16th. That is against Atlanta United. Mark, I have to believe current Atlanta United front office member and former teammate of Marcelo Balboa, Chris Henderson, I could not think of a better person to have to be there with his other, the club team that he is now employed by as a member of the front office. And I'm sure Hendo will be down either whether it's after the game, before the game, or at halftime to partake in the festivities and hopefully wearing a little Rapids green, not just some Atlanta United black and red five-stripe stuff. Mark, let's throw this over to some Ask HTHLs. So, Mark, Goldfish asks on Burgundy Sky, who joins the Gallery of Honor first? Fish, who have 45 flawless shows during Fish Dicks over Labor Day weekend, or Omar Cummings, who had won MLS Cup. Mark, this is a bit of a meme question because I don't see a scenario in which a non-Rapids player or coach is getting in the Gallery of Honor. Your thoughts?
Brian Mullen? I mean, like, it's a... Matt doesn't remember Brian Mullen.
Brian Mullen.
You do? He was a very talented midfielder who I never really got to see play because he blew out his knee the season that I started to watch the Rapids in 2013. I mean, you know, yeah, it's a great meme question. I very much like Fish and Fish fans, and I have lots of friends, as I assume Matt does too, who are completely unaware of the fact that there's a soccer team that plays at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. They literally just think that that's a venue for Fish, and that's all there is to it. But, you know, so they've contributed mightily to the bottom line of the Colorado Rapids. By the way, we didn't even talk about the fact that a website this past week released financial data about all of Major League Soccer and noted that the Colorado Rapids were the 27th most valuable franchise in the league, but were dead last 29 out of 29 in terms of estimated revenues. So they estimated that the Colorado Rapids generated, I think, $45 million in gross revenue. Nobody knows what the net is on that, because once you take out salaries for players, then you've got to guesstimate at staff salaries and all the other stuff, and they don't know. So anyways, point is, you know, it makes the team money and people enjoy it in Colorado, so go Fish.
I should say, shout out to Joseph Samuelson and to Jody Robbins, who I saw Dogs in the Pile with over the weekend as well, Mark. So good jam band spacing, even if we're not playing at outdoor venues in early February here in Denver, Colorado. Rapids Bray asked, hashtag AskHTHL, Dauda Amadou, any insight on this player? I didn't watch R2, so I don't know where he plays or what his game is like. So Dauda Amadou, listeners, was a Rapids 2 player, I believe, the last 2 years, and then at some point last year, he signed a pre-first team contract to join the first team proper, so he's one of the players taking up an international roster slot. I would say very much a box-to-box number 8 mark, and in particular, more of a piano carrier than a piano player. I suppose the Rapids first team starting comp that he's closest to is probably Connor Ronan. He did a little bit of everything, and really, listeners, he was there to cover space and do things the last 2 years, which then empowered a Marlon Vargas to go do stuff going forward. Or the year prior to that, it would have been a Yosuke Hanya or an Oliver LaRoz. So I think fits into the secondary option of what you would want in the double pivot for the Rapids. He has been training entirely with the Rapids first team. He was down in Mexico with the team. He was at Rapids first team training earlier today. I don't know how much first team minutes he's getting. I imagine he could be one of those guys who's almost in like the taxi squad situation alongside KSB or even Wayne Frederick, where they're on the bench for Rapids 1, and then if they're an unused substitute or they only play like 10 minutes, maybe they start but don't go 90 minutes on the Sunday for the second team. But that's a little bit of what he's like as a player. Really curious to see how Chris Armas chooses to use him, because things were a little bit thin this past year in the midfield for Eric Boucher on Rapids 2. That doesn't necessarily maybe reflect where Dauda Amadou's best position is or where he would be most useful to the first team. So, Mark, we got a couple questions about Darren Yapi. One of those was about whether or not Yapi not playing in preseason, and we kind of already covered what was going on there. But then Mr. Biz, come on, you Spurs, Mr. Biz, just showed up for me on Spotify. Next pod, who is your pick for breakout this season? I've got Yapi fever this season, over under on 9.5 goal contributions. Mark, I'm assuming if he's missing 2 full months of the season, he's probably not getting to 10 goals. But Mark, what do you think? What's a good goal number for Yapi, given he finally broke his duck this time last season? And any guys who you're picking to be your guy for breakout player of the year?
So my number for Yapi is 5. I think even if he hadn't been hurt, I just think the guy is a solid, unspectacular talent. He presses really well. He's a good 70th or 90th minute replacement, but I think we're starting to see Darren Yapi is exactly what he is right now, which is a useful cog in the machine, but not a breakout star in Major League Soccer. And that's okay. My breakout player for the year is first round, fourth overall pick, Alex Harris. I am feeling like he, as a Generation Adidas player, is going to get time with the first team. They're going to roll him out. I'm starting to think that the formation is going to require, and the lack of attacking big physical winger type guys in the lineup means that Alex is going to get chances. I think Calvin Harris has had those opportunities, but I think Alex Harris, no relation, is going to get some other shots on the other side. And I think those opportunities will be all the more so if we see any time for Kevin Cabral or Calvin Harris or Kamani Stewart-Baines to be injured. There just needs to be a little bit more depth at that position. So I can see him getting like 800 minutes and scoring 4 goals, and that would be huge for a young player in his first year in the league.
I'll throw you 2 ones here, Mark, in terms of my breakout players of the year. I'm still holding on to my Kamani Stewart-Baines stock, and I will not be selling on that. And Rabbi, I don't know if this counts. He's new to the team. He's played regularly. Like he got like 15 starts for a team that won the Supporters Shield. Can I get Ian Murphy? Is that allowed? Is he new enough and young enough to be breakout player?
Allowed.
Right.
I'll allow it.
Those are my two. And if you want to add a second guy, you know, right before the LAFC game, then that's fine. Last guest, HDHL, Mark. And I believe this might be a first of one of us asking and ask HDHL specifically for the other one. So, Mark, you would have sent this a while ago over on Burgundy Sky. You would have sent this on January 16th. I have an Ask HTHL for at by Matt Pollard. Matt Doyle wrote, given the Rapids are expected to switch from the 4-2-3-1 to from a 4-2-3-1 to a 3-4-2-1, this year's piece on MLSsoccer.com. Have you heard that from Armis? Also, who goes where for Colorado in a 3-4-2-1? Internally, Mark, they've been calling it a 3-4-3, although Armis will always caveat that by saying sometimes it looks like a back five. So I don't know, Mark, if this is like similar to the Anthony Hudson diamond that was the flattest diamond that has ever existed in world football. In any case, fans would love to know your input. So first of all, listeners, while I thought Doyle made a couple good points about what worked in the 3-4-3, particularly in that playoff game against LA Galaxy, when Doyle wrote this article, I believe it was the day before Rapids Media Day, in which we got a little bit more insight, in which Armis doubled down on saying that their default formation that they're going to be most comfortable with, that they're going to play most of the season, is going to be the 4-2-3-1. And then there will be situations in which they implement the 3-4-3 either situationally or specific to the opponent or trying to shut down games. There's aspects of having three center backs on the field they feel they have the depth for, and they feel like provides a little bit more cover defensively, makes them a little bit less open, and makes up for the lack of a, you know, 27-mile-an-hour burning Moise Bombito to recover when they don't have numbers back for a defensive counterattack situation. So I am very confident, listeners, that the Rapids will be spending the majority, I'll say at least 75% of the minutes this year, all competitions in the 4-2-3-1 rather than the 3-4-3, pending some significant transfer or something else that changes the numbers or depth options at different positions. If they suddenly get Virgil van Dijk, for example, on a free transfer, you bet damn well the Rapids are going to have three center backs at the back for me. So then I think the question here, Mark, is then who goes in the various roles? Because as you were talking about, there were times we saw in that one game, albeit a small sample size, in which Reggie Cannon was the third center back or Keegan Rosenberry was the third center back. If I had to put it right now, Mark, if Chris Armis had to go out and win a game where he had to play all 90 minutes in the 3-4-3 and it was win or you don't make the playoffs even in February, here's how I think the Rapids would line up in that. I think it's still Zach Steffen in goal. I think the three center backs right now are Andreas Maxu, Chido Awazium, and Ian Murphy. I don't know enough about Chido and Ian Murphy in terms of where they played when they played in a three-back to be who would on what side. I would believe that Andreas Maxu would be the middle of the three center backs. I think, Mark, then with that, you would then allow your wide players to be more proper wingbacks. So then I think this would be the true return of the Sam Vines back. So I would have him on the left. I would stick with Keegan Rosenberry in the right. Then I would say the middle of the four, Mark, and then I would almost do a box between the two up top and then the two central midfielders. I would have some combination of Kevin Cabral, Georgi Mihailovic, Cole Bassett, and then one of Connor Ronan or Oliver LaRoz. I would lean towards Connor Ronan because you would want a little bit more defensive coverage. I think there's situations in which Oliver LaRoz would be better for that. And then, of course, you would have Rafael Navajo up top. Mark, what do you think of my formation? What changes, if any, would you make to it?
Those are all good options. I'm going to actually punt in the sense that, well, I talked formation and position a little bit earlier in the podcast. And I actually don't really want to make any predictions until maybe right before the first game of the season, just out of safety for myself and also for the length of the pod. But I still, in my heart of hearts, feel like maybe this team is going to roll out a 4-2-3-1 to start the season. So so I think it's going to look mostly like last year. Trying to figure out who's healthy on day one to play the wings is really the most important thing. And your shout about what we do without Sam Vines if he's not ready to start the season due to injury is also a really good one. I am still a little confused, and I like your answer just as much as anybody else's, but I need more data.
I agree with you there, Mark. And I will say, for the listeners who do want to disagree, I think you could, if you told me that you wanted to substitute Reggie Cannon into either of the wingback positions or the third center back position, I could be convinced of that, or at least I wouldn't push back on that. And if you wanted to sub in Calvin Harris for Kevin Cabral, I would be willing to entertain that. Omir Fernandez wasn't good enough or wasn't consistent enough for me, Mark. I think Calvin is better centrally. I think he's better out wide. And I think you still want that direct threat, which is why even though you would have Kevin Cabral further in if you're playing the 3-4-2-1 as opposed to properly the 3-4-3, that's what I would still go with. And I could hear arguments for Connor Ronan or Ollie LaRoz in the middle next to Cole Bassett. So any one of those adjustments or changes that any listeners would want to make into what they would want that formation to look like, I could be convinced of, or at the very least, I could understand the thinking behind that. Mark, shall we get out of here?
I'm good, man.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on social media. We're mostly on Blue Sky right now, where you can check out, obviously, Rabbi Mark After Goodman. I am at by Matt Pollard. Check us out. We're more active on Burgundy Sky. We are still on the app formerly known as Twitter, at Rapids96 Podcast across all platforms. Rate, review, share, subscribe, wherever you get your podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can support us financially. That's where you can buy in to ensure that you're getting the merch, which we are in development on, Mark. There's an email thread that I've been sitting on for a week that I know I need to respond to. I will respond to that today or tomorrow, I promise you on that. Check out all of my written work, Rapids related, at burgundywave.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you hopefully next week. Mark, are we going weekly now since we're 2 weeks out from the season?
I think we're ready.
All right. It's officially, I think, Mark, do we want to drop the new intro next week?
Oh, that sounds really good. It's your call. Okay. You're the maker of the intros. You are the arbiter also.
New intro next week, officially, listeners. We will see you then. Enjoy the rest of preseason. Stay warm amid fake spring and the groundhog seeing a shadow and everything. And very, very excited, Mark, to see you in person on February 18th. And listeners will definitely be having some meetups for the Highliners who want to see us IRL. We'll see you.
Peace!